My special guest today is Associate Professor Julia Brotherton, who is the Medical Director of the National HPV Vaccination Program Register. Thanks for your time, Julia.
No problem.
You've co-authored a short report for us on the HPV register and some results that you've been able to pull out of the data. Tell us a little bit. I know there's new things coming next year in terms of the national screening program. Tell us a little bit about what's going to happen.
So in 2017, we're going to see the renewal of the National Cervical Screening Program. And as you all know, it's been remarkably successful. Has so far, you know, we've seen reductions in cervical cancer of 50%. So we've halved the rate since that program started. However, the program is really based on old technology. So pap testing has been around for a very, very long time. And in the same way, we don't have the same mixers or ovens in our kitchens that were used in the 1950s. It's really time. It's not that they don't work, it's that it's time to update our technology. Yep. So the new program is going to take advantage of all the incredible randomized controlled trials that have been done internationally over the last 10 years, which have shown that using an HPV DNA test, so actually looking for the virus that causes cervical cancer, is a far more sensitive way of detecting these precancerous lesions that we're looking for. And so Australia is going to be one of the first countries in the world to actually roll this out to our population. And all the projections are is that it's actually going to be a superior test, but also more efficient, and it's going to be a safer test. So it's going to actually reduce cancer even more effectively and actually save us money. So it is
so the end of the pap smear.
Yeah. Well, what doctors and women do need to know is that, in fact, you still need to take a cervical sample.
Right.
So the bad news is we're still taking samples from the cervix. The good news is it will be every 5 years rather than every. So a significant advantage for women and providers. This is obviously, you know, a very exciting new initiative. We're very confident it's supported by very strong data, that it will be very safe and very effective for the women of Australia. And the new research that we've done here indicates that in our population, we already have young women who are at lower risk of cervical cancer due to vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we know that the great thing about this test is it should work just as well in those women, whether they're vaccinated or unvaccinated. So the advantage of a DNA HPV DNA test is it tells you right now if you have one of those high-risk HPV types present. So whether you were vaccinated and didn't get all your doses, whether you were vaccinated but only had one dose, whether you were sexually active before you were vaccinated and so the vaccine, of course, doesn't clear the infection, or whether you were never vaccinated. The point is this woman who I'm seeing right now currently infected with a type that could result in cervical cancer in 10 or 20 years. And if it's positive, it's going to send her down a different path than the negative women, in whom we know a negative HPV test result means she is going to be safer 5 years after than she is currently 2 years after a pap test. So the predictive value of HPV testing is one of the main reasons why it's so advantageous. So if you don't have HPV there right now, we know your risk of cervical precancer in the next 5 years is very low.
Are GPs aware of this yet? Has it been rolled out to them in any shape?
Look, the communication strategies, I think, are still under development.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly getting a lot of discussion happening already.
Yep.
And there certainly needs to be a lot of communication that's going to happen between now and when the program starts. So the program is due to start in May 2017. So the program will be supported by a new National Cancer Screening Register.
Mm-hmm.
So at the moment we've got 8 state and territory pap test registers, which do a fantastic job, but
yes,
of course women don't necessarily live all their lives in one state.
No.
So this is going to be a much better arrangement. And of course, if we're only screening every 5 years, we really do need to make sure we're inviting women, reminding them that it's been 5 years.
Exactly.
So the register will have a really pivotal role in ensuring the program is well supported and well monitored.
Will pap smears in the current form continue, or will they be phased out completely?
So pap smears as such will have sort of a secondary role.
Yeah.
So if a woman is HPV DNA positive and it shows she has a high risk type, Then the next thing that will happen within the laboratory is that her liquid-based cytology test be a smear on a slide anymore. It'll be a liquid sample that can be used for both the HPV and DNA test, and if necessary, can be looked at as a liquid-based cytology specimen in the same way that you can actually do that at the moment for your cytology screening instead of an actual slide.
Right.
So, yes, there will be a lot less of them done, but all the ones that are done will be in high-risk HPV-positive women. Yes, that we will see a great reduction in the need for screeners in the cytology workforce, but we will certainly still need expert screeners to look at those ones in women who do have the virus detected. So there will still be a smaller role in the program for that kind of testing.
Tell us about the results that you've been able to extract from your data about 25 to 29-year-olds. Mm-hmm.
So we've been closely looking at the Victorian Cervical Cytology Registry data since the program, the vaccination program started, looking, I guess, with keen anticipation for falls in the number of those CIN2 plus lesions, so those high-grade lesions, which are the ones that can, if they're left, result in cancer in some women.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually were the first to demonstrate anywhere in the world that we did start to see a decline only a couple of years after the program started, and you may recall that was in our very young women, so women under 18 who were screening quite early.
Mm-hmm.
And as time has gone on since then, we've progressively seen the age group of women who are having drops in those rates of precancerous lesions detected in Victoria declining over time. And the result that we're presenting here is for the first time we've now seen that go all the way up into the 25 to 29-year-old age group.
Mm-hmm.
So these women in the last 2 years have had a 17% decline in the number of women who are this is actually the rate of women who are screened who have these abnormalities detected. And this fits beautifully with what we're seeing in terms of declines in genital warts, in terms of declines in HPV prevalence. So when we look in young women now, we only find it in about 1% of women have 16 or 18, whereas in the pre-vaccine era, it would have been 25%. It's absolutely crashed through the floor, and you can now see that in our screening program results, which is just so exciting.
Yes.
You know, we did undertake a massive vaccine catch-up program in this country, but we were vaccinating women who were already sexually active. So we're now just starting to see, even in those adult women, the protective effects of vaccination. So these would be young women who otherwise in the last 5 years would have probably, a lot of them would have been exposed to 16 and 18 and they would have got lesions as a result.
Yep.
And the fact that we're seeing these declines reflects the fact that those lesions aren't happening because that infection isn't happening. So this is really fantastic news, and it also reassures us that when we introduce the renewed program, which is going to recommend screening starts at age 25, not only will this be a very safe thing to do over and above the fact we now know Pap testing doesn't really work properly in those under 25, it's the prevalence of these really severe oncogenic HPV types in our community is incredibly low. And so we won't be over-referring women to a colposcopy, which was, of course, a concern. If you had an unvaccinated population and you referred everyone who was 16, 18 positive to colposcopy, we know pre-vaccine that would have been a quarter of all women. That would not be a feasible strategy. In our post-vaccine environment, it looks like it will be highly feasible and highly effective. So these results just show that the timing is right for Australia to move forward and I think be a world leader in this area. The results, I think, have been even more dramatic and occurred even faster than we had thought, particularly the genital warts story. It was almost a byproduct of trying to prevent cervical cancer with a vaccine that just happened to include those types that cause warts. And wart prevalence fell so quickly. We saw the herd protection effects. At that time, we weren't vaccinating boys as well. Guess what? They don't get warts either anymore because the females they're having sex with don't have warts. I mean, absolutely incredible the amount of disease that we're avoiding already. And the fact that we're going to have a lot less young women needing treatment for cervical precancer lesions, which as we know can be not only unpleasant and traumatic, but you know, there's reasonable evidence that it can have adverse effects on fertility. So I really think this is a fantastic preventive health program And our experience of the vaccine in Australia has been very positive. The wonderful safety data we have collected shows the vaccine is very safe and effective. And I think that that's really important, that as a world leader here, we demonstrate those things. And we now have, as of last year, 65 countries have got HPV vaccine in the national immunisation programs, because it's now subsidised by Gavi.
Yep.
The poorest countries in the world are getting access to this vaccine, and of course that's where it's really needed. Yep. Places where screening programs are logistically impossible and completely unaffordable, that they're the people who really benefit, I think, from our experience, I hope, in showing the vaccine safe and effective so that they can advocate this is a really good health investment for those women who have the highest rates of cervical cancer in the world.
Do you get much blowback from the anti-vaxxers?
Oh, look, we certainly get a bit. I think HPV vaccines just, one in a long line of vaccines that they like to aim at. And I think generally we've handled it quite well. And I think it's really because, in Australia, we do have excellent monitoring and surveillance around our vaccine programs. So we know how many doses we're giving, and we've demonstrated that it's working.
Yeah.
We've got good safety systems. So no one's saying vaccines are perfect, they're just like any other medication. But if there's a problem, we're confident that we can detect it. And I think that's really part of the battle in having public confidence in our programs, is saying we're looking, we do care. We're going to continue to evaluate, and that's really what's happened with this program. So I think because of that, I think it is a bit harder for the anti-vaccination groups here to gain a bit of traction. So
yeah.
If you compare it to the situation, say, in Japan, where unfortunately they don't have the fantastic public health infrastructure we have. So when there's a problem, they can't immediately look at data, provide reassurance, and then you get the media out of control, you get the anti-vaccine groups have a voice and a space, and then once that happens, you lose people's confidence, and I understand that. And I think we're really fortunate here that we have, good systems, good communications, and I think we've really been able to solidly show what the vaccine's doing is beneficial.
Thanks for your time today.
You're welcome.